Yes, dear. One moment, please.
Thank you.
Rather than in Atlanta, I
had my choice as to where I could open, open the office and all. And the, I chose Nashville because a variety of people were saying, you know, well, Vanderbilt University would be a good spot to be around, so. And the net result was that's where I settled. And in the process, and my first immediate task was doing workshops on nonviolence all around the South. As a consequence of that, I determined that I should try to develop a model for the movement to look at, in which I would put into operation a kind of a full display of nonviolent philosophy in action, and that should be done in Nashville. So we already had geared some workshops in Nashville. Then the National Christian Leadership Conference determined that we should, I became the action chairman for that group, and they determined that we should indeed plan a movement for Nashville. And in 58, we did a variety of kinds of workshops, and early 59, trying to decide upon a project, and we determined it ought to be a project in the downtown area. So in the fall of 1959, started a series of workshops with student and community people with an aim towards developing the leadership at, in the downtown area, specifically Synod. We did testing, developing our targets and all the rest of it. So that's how I got involved in the Synod. So in February, we did testing in November and workshops follow up. Then we were stopped by exams and whatnot. February 1st came along, we were ready and we moved immediately.
The Greensboro sit-ins did precede what you did.
Did precede that public phase.
Yes.
But we had already done not only preparation but exploratory work on targets, practicing, sending groups out to practice nonviolence, not sitting continuously, but when they were trying instead to confront waiters and waitresses and, if possible, the managers, and then leaving before arrest.
I see.
But that was all for the purpose of their training and discovering what was going on.
Uh-huh. And when this testing phase started in the fall, then?
Yeah, this started in November. It was November, I'm pretty sure, when we started the weekly forages of experimentation into a variety of lunch counters and restaurants.
Okay.
Downtown Nashville.
You had some whites involved in that as well as blacks, right?
All right, now let me think about this. In the fall, I am not positive, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I cannot be positive about that in the fall. I'm trying to remember if some of the exchange students at Fisk were involved, but I'm also trying to remember if at that time, I know we took visitors sometimes at some of that, because we had a couple of church people from Africa touring, and they went on with a couple of our groups. And I can't recall if we had any white from Nashville consistently in that fall. Paula Prod and a couple of exchange students were active in the sit-in campaign in February, but I can't remember if they were in workshops in the fall.
Okay. What was the role of Will Campbell in the sit-in?
Okay, Will organized what we called our observer groups. Stayed in the downtown area when we were there, keeping a running record of everything they saw. And Will quite specifically organized that. And then also, of course, beyond that, was involved with the Human Relations Conference with other folk interpreting what we were doing.
Okay. What was Everett Tilson's role?
I do not remember for full in early 60, but I would assume that he might have been one of those observers. I have to tell you, I did deliberately, in fact, some of the folk at Vanderbilt sort of did not like my decision, but I sort of deliberately did not include them in certain public phases for strategic reasons, namely that their presence would often further inflame things and make Vanderbilt more the target than our business downtown the target. So I quite deliberately low-keyed exposing Vanderbilt students and people, at least in the initial days, to it. Also, the larger number of whites, we used as witnesses and observers, rather than as people sitting in directly.
Right.
We used them in these other roles, and that, again, was a deliberate decision for the purpose of court cases and the rest.
About Kelly Moore Smith.
Well, Kelly Moore Smith was president of the National Christian Leadership Conference. He was in on all of the executive sessions, and then, of course, became chairperson of our negotiating committee. In the public phase of things, became the chairperson of our negotiating committee. So his role was, and of course, many other roles. He was supportive. He often did press with us. His church was the headquarters for the actual demonstrations. He helped to mobilize different units of the community, like the lawyers, other public officials behind the whole thing. I don't recall specifics.
Okay. Charles Jones.
Oh, Lordy. That's another problematic name. It's more problematic, though, because there were at least three Charles Jones, one white and two black, who were involved in the struggle in different phases and different ways.
Well, this one was a Presbyterian minister over in Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
Yes, that's right. Well, there was a black Presbyterian too, Charles Jones, in North Carolina.
Have run into him?
Yeah, he was a younger man. I can't remember details, though.
Okay. Did you ever run into a Nell Morton?
Oh, yes.
Do you recall how, where, when?
Oh, Lordy. That's a very difficult question, because I can't remember precisely when or where, because she has been a fairly long time in my life, in my student days, as I remember.
Where was that?
Well, I was in Ohio, Baldwin Wallace, but as I recall, Nell Morton was in some of the national meetings I was into, North America and student things, and that's where we first met, but I do not know where this was, so she was one of those kinds of people. Though I did not know her well, I knew her reputation as a person of courage and a person deeply committed to racial justice and change. Then as a consequence of my meeting her and also then becoming a draft resister and whatnot in the 50s, she became one of the people who strongly supported my life, ministry, and witness, and still does. I just talked with her back in September. She's retired out here at Claremont.
Yes, I know. I spent a couple of days with her last summer.
I didn't realize
you were out in Los Angeles. I would have seen you at that time if I could have.
Yeah, so, in fact, I was on TV in a run-in with Ed Robb of the Institute of Religion and Race me that after, didn't tell me I'm glad and pleased she was with what I did. So she's continued to be a that kind of a motivator of mine.
Miles Fort.
Of course, Miles was Highlander School. And adult education, it was, of course, a center where there could be multiracial meetings. I did some things with him and at Highlander in the late 50s and 60s. Then later on, I was a member of his board. He was one of the pioneers in trying to move Tennessee in the South.
Jim Dombrowski.
Okay, New Orleans. He was one of those folk who had a long career trying to bring about changes and was very, very supportive of the whole nonviolent black movement.
Recall any way he supported it?
Beg pardon?
And do you recall any specific way he supported it?
Well, sure. Both Horton with his organization, but Jabrowski, I cannot remember the name of the group. I guess at different times I was part of his group, too. It went out of existence in the late 60s or early 70s. And Brayton worked for it, Carl Brayton.
Yeah.
I can't recall even the blooming name of it. He through that network that he tried to put together that was multiracial, so with funds, with people who got involved, with interpreting, with the newsletter that used to report so many, many things of change, just a great variety of ways of support. One of those whites who had a very a clear understanding of what it was all about, and I think had the confidence of a sizable number of black people around the South that knew him. Miles Horton would be in that category. Will Campbell would be in that category, definitely. My experience.
James McBride Dabbs.
Knew him only from a distance. Southern, whatever it is, the Southern Regional Council. South Carolina. And so I'd met him a couple of times and been in some of the Southern Regional meetings with him. More from a distance, but knew, of course, he was again one of those figures who was very well honored among the people who knew him well for his prophetic positions he took in support of change. May know the name, but I don't recall.
Okay. Gene Smathers.
Oh, I'd say the same.
Okay. Scotty Cowan?
No.
Warren Ashby?
I'm more familiar with that name, but I don't recall much.
Okay. On to Churchill?
No.
Jim Holloway?
Yes, I've met Jim a number of times. He was Southern Churchman, editor of Catalogette. Writer. Known him more from that position, though we'd been in the same meetings on a couple occasions.
Okay.
And I guess Will and I, also in Nashville a couple times, I had lunch with him and Will.
Okay. What can you tell me about Will Campbell? How would you characterize him?
Okay, well, I personally had almost complete confidence in Will. He was one of the people with whom I talked over a great, great variety of things. We traveled together at different times during the Little Rock crisis, for example, the school situation. He and I, two or three occasions, went into Little Rock together, stayed together, and various contacts. I was very active, 57, 58. And in fact, continue. Ernest Green and I, one of the school students, the first one to graduate. I have been friends ever since because of my involvement with them. So I came to have a very, very high appreciation of Will. theologically like my own, namely of the radical character of the scriptures, love ye the enemy, turn the other cheek, care about the sinner and the oppressed and the bruised. And of course, I carry that to the place where I recognize the necessity of transformation of the KK member and the hard-nosed segregation. Frequently in the hostility that I've gained across the years, I've always sought to see such persons in that light. So Will, probably more than anyone that I had met, especially in the white community, came closer to my own biblical position on the revolutionary character of the gospel. He and I did not always agree about the efficacies of nonviolence. I don't know if he would claim even to be a practitioner, but he at least had a clear understanding of the nonviolent demand that I tried to teach and practice and preach.
Thomas Kilgore.
Well, I've come to know Tom much better since I've come out to L.A. For me, originally, he was the New York man, preacher, who backed SCLC and opened up our New York office. So I knew him more from that distance than from national conventions. We knew each other face-to-face and on a first-name basis as a consequence of board meetings and staff meetings and that sort of thing. But still, he was more of a distant figure. I knew of his very active support, fundraising and the like, but...
You didn't know him as an activist way in the South?
Yeah, I did not see him in the Southeast as an activist.
Okay. Murray Branch?
I don't recall.
Ben Mays?
I'm sure I know both Murray Branch and Ben Mays, but I don't recall.
Okay, did you ever know Leon Hughley?
I really wasn't close to it except to Will, and I saw it primarily as the vehicle that essentially Will formed and reorganized for the purpose of providing himself with a basic organizational leverage and platform to organize his ministry. That's really how I saw it. I wasn't aware in those years in the 60s that they had that many meetings. They did more relating to Will Campbell's phone calls and correspondence than they really did have that many meetings. They sustained and supported his work and his philosophy. Of course, the magazine became a prophetic voice, it seemed to me at least. But again, how widely circulated it was, I don't know.
Or to whom?
Yes, or to whom, right.
What about the faculty at Vanderbilt? Who gave you the greatest support there?
I suppose that's fairly hard to say. I would say, though, that it would probably have been a combination of Everett Tilson and J. Robert Nelson. I would say yes. In fact, I would definitely say it was those two would be the main two. I had J. Robert Nelson was someone I admired. He was work with the prophetic tradition in his interpretation and all. So I guess that's where I really, in a sense, fell in love with Edward Tilson through his class. And we talked, visited. He was also Will's friend. I would say those two were my most supporting people of the faculty.
Was there anyone who surprised you with a lack of support?
I should also say, I guess, that Roger Shin was my counselor there, my faculty counselor. And he was quite helpful and supportive at times that I had conferences with him. Bard Thompson and I became very close because I was very excited by his teaching also. And I think he had a very firm trust in me, although we didn't really know that each other that well. I had nevertheless a very firm trust in him, I know. I guess the person that surprised me, though in some ways we did get reconciled in 1970, and he surprised me not because I knew him, but because of his Old Testament reputation. Up to that time I had not had him. That was Hyatt, who I understood from a variety of people was quite negative about my whole role. I was saying we got reconciled because I went back on a sabbatical in 70-71, took his Jeremiah course, and he was both impressed with my ability, and I was in turn impressed by his knowledge of the prophetic movement and the way in which he treated Jeremiah. So we did get reconciled, but I suppose that was the one, but it wasn't because he knew me or I knew him. It was more because I just assumed that person steeped in the prophetic tradition would have more of an understanding of the what happens with Christian witness.
Is there anyone in particular you think I should talk to understand the Committee of Southern Churchmen other than Will?
Well, I would think Jim Holloway would be one. Did not Beverly Asbury get active in this?
Yes. He's on the executive committee now.
Okay. Well, then I would think that Beverly would be somebody. Now, another guy that probably we should talk to is Baxton Bryant.
Mm-hmm.
It occurs to me. Because I don't know if Baxton actually was I don't know if he was actually on their executive board or anything. But he became the chairperson of the Tennessee Council of Human Relations. He became the executive director of the Tennessee Council of Human Relations. He and Will got along very, very well. So you ought to talk to Baxter Bryant. He's in the United Methodist Church now, pastor in Dallas, Texas.
I didn't realize he was pastor there.
Yeah, he went back in the pastorate several years ago. I'm going to probably retire from the pastorate. So you got to talk to Baxton.
Okay.
Now let me think, who else? Gosh, some of the stalwarts are now deceased. Just a moment, let me ask my wife, Dorothy.
Dorothy?
Come here a minute, please.
say, Dallas.
Yeah.
Do you have the people who were, the person who was at Mercer College?
Jim Hendricks, Joe Hendricks, or Tom Trimble.
Okay.
They're there now. There was someone else who was at Mercer, though.
Yeah, that doesn't sound familiar. And then also, there was somebody at Wake Forest.
Wake Forest, I don't...
Yeah, and I can't recall. Dorothy was reminding me. She can't recall who it was, too. There was someone very active at Wake Forest. Was W.W. Finlater never in that?
Not that I know of.
Is that
been.
Right? Well, how about this guy, Pulley, North Carolina? What is his name?
I haven't run into that Pulley.
Ah, gosh. Yeah, there was another wild-eyed preacher, North Carolina, white. I think Southern Baptist. If he wasn't active, he was a supporter.
I can write him down. Check it.
Pulley, or, was it Poteet?
Poteet?
Poteet. P-O-T-E-A-T.
Yeah, there was a Poteet.
Okay, P-O-T-E-A-T, maybe that's who it is.
Right. Okay, yeah, I've seen that name. I never knew him myself, though.
Yeah. Let's see, I was trying to think of, there's another person from, back in the
60s. I've got it down somewhere in my notes.
Uh-huh.
I remember there was someone from Mercer that surprised me. It was a new name to me.
Yeah.
But I can run that one down, too.
Of course, George Barrett, you must have that name.
Yes.
You'd want to.
The attorney.
Yeah. Duncan Gray, you know that name?
Yeah.
Okay, also Robert Hughes.
Right.
Alabama.
Mm-hmm. The missionary who got kicked out of Rhodesia.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. You'd want to look at it and talk with him.
In fact, he was a missionary to Alabama from Rhodesia for a while.
Beg pardon?
He was a missionary to Alabama from Rhodesia for a while.
That's right.
Yeah.
And, of course, you're going to talk to Julius Lester, I suppose.
Yes.
Let me see who else.
Do you know where Julius Lester is?
Yes, University of Massachusetts Amherst, the last I heard.
Oh.
I think he's still there.
Okay.
He's been on that faculty for some time, though. Let me think. Who else around Nashville? Oh, there was a reporter who was a good friend of Will's at the, what's the name of the paper?
The Tennessean?
Tennessean. Wrote a couple of the studies of of human relations in Nashville. I can't think of his name. He later went, I think, to NBC News as a writer. Will should know who this is. He was there in 60. He should be helpful. Let me see. Oh yes. Oh, Pat Waters.
Yes.
From Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Should be helpful. I don't know if what's his name became the State Department spokesperson for Carter.
Oh,
Jim.
Young.
Huh?
Not Young.
Huh?
Andy Young?
No. From Greenville, Mississippi. Carter. Now, his father, too, might be a valuable source if his father's still living.
I don't think he is.
Okay. Now, of course, PD East. But he's dead, isn't he?
Yeah.
That's right. Dorothy has reminded me. A woman in Greenville, Tennessee. Yes. I can't remember her last name. Jean something. But Will Campbell should know.
Yeah.
She would be somebody to talk to about it, too.
Okay.
And then there was someone in Crossville, Tennessee.
Elmer G?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Elmer G. Right. Well, let me see. I guess Nell Morton must have given you some names for the old group, didn't she?
Yes.
Some of those people were still around in the 60s.
Tom Kilgore was one of that old group. He was in North Carolina at one time.
Okay, that's right. He was. That's where he's born and raised.
You ever run into a Charles McCoy?
I'm not sure.
He's at Pacific School of Religion now, teaches ethics there.
Uh-huh.
But he was a student at Duke in the 40s.
Yeah.
And got related to, Nell was secretary of the Southern Church, Fellowship of Southern Churchmen then.
Right.
In Chapel Hill, and they were integrating churches and the universities around Chapel Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Back around 46, 47. And I'm trying to see if there's a connection at all between what they were doing then and the civil rights movement, say, in the 50s and 60s. Some of them maintain they worked out the tactics of the later civil rights movement, like they would send a pair, male and female, white and black, four people, to various churches. And just walk, they'd go to various churches and just walk in and sit down.
Mm-hmm.
And do the integration in that pattern in the 40s, and I was just astounded that they did it and got away with it.
Well, of course, though, that two-by-two tactic is a fairly old thing, though, because, you see, the sit-in technique was really developed in places like Chicago, Los Angeles, St. Louis, Cleveland, Washington, D.C. in the early 40s.
Uh-huh.
It was written up in a whole variety of national publications at the time.
Uh-huh.
That's where Congress and Racial Equality began.
Yeah.
They grew out of the early sit-ins that were in the North on restaurants and skating rinks.
Uh-huh.
By the time I came along, the Congress of Racial Equality was doing summer work camps, summer workshops for students who were interested in developing nonviolent understandings. This is by 1946, 47. They were doing that.
Right. They also participated with the Fellowship of Reconciliation in the 1947 test of the Interstate Commerce.
Right. Yes, right.
Nell Morton and that group were involved.
Yes, that's
that.
Right. Those were the contacts all across that area.
Uh-huh. Do you think groups of people like this, the folks like Nell Morton and all those folks, helped to form a network of people who later were involved in the regional civil rights movement in the South?
Oh, yes, I think that's true. I think it's clear that there was a network in the 40s of people who were experimenting with a whole variety of multiracial contacts and efforts.
Uh-huh.
I was beholden to it, too, because by the time 57 rolled around, frequently my host in places like Monroeville, Virginia, Little Rock, Crossville, and a lot of these places would be a white family that was a product either of the FOR network or of that old Fellowship of Southern Churchmen. They would be the people who would house me and all the rest. there was a significant network that they were a part of.
Glad to know that.
It is an important network.
Yeah.
You know.
Of course.
I shouldn't just say that, because in the late 40s, also I was a recipient of it. Because in Methodist meetings that I had to attend as a national youth officer in places like Kentucky and Tennessee, also a number of them were my hosts.
Got into the network early on.
That's right. I've almost forgotten the fact that I got into that network in the late 40s.
Okay. Well,
early 50s.
Well, I thank you for your time, Jim.
Okay, Dallas.
And I'll probably be in touch with you again.
Okay.
And tell Dorothy hello and thanks
a lot.
Okay.
Best wishes to you.
You too.
All right. Bye.